Call the meeting of the Energy, Finance, and Policy Division to order. We do have a quorum wandering around somewhere here. First order of business would be the approval of the minutes. But before we do that, we also have a correction to the minutes of the last meeting.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Knuth.
On the third page of the minutes, or the second page of the minutes, it says HF on several amendments, and it should just say H. Is that enough? Is that clear enough?
It is, members. What happened is that when the clerk just transcribed the amendment numbers, she inadvertently put HF instead of just H, and we need to correct that in the minutes of March. What is the date?
March 15th.
No, that would be the minutes of March 16th.
Yep.
I don't know exactly how to deal with that procedurally. Representative Osmond, do you know how to deal with that procedurally?
What's the question you need to take
place? We just need to delete the F after the...
On the amendments.
On the amendments. The amendments were listed as HF instead of just H.
Okay.
The
minutes are just reflecting whatever occurred, Mr. Chair. We can just have a correction made in the minutes if that's
what we want. Well, I think all we need, if you agree, is just a motion to correct the minutes.
Correct.
Which no is, that is moved. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion prevails. Down to the minutes of March. And that's... We have a similar correction to make in the minutes from March 9th. Representative Knuth, would you like to make that motion?
I move to correct the minutes from March 9th.
By removing the...
F in the name of the amendment.
That's the motion. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you for that. Sorry, we will be more careful in the future. To today's agenda, Representative Eakin, House File 1350.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And if the bill could be moved, I do have an amendment as well for it, an oral amendment.
Yes, the Chair will... move that House File 1350 be recommended to pass, be referred to the Committee on Finance with a recommendation to re-refer to the Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Division.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the oral amendment I have would be on line 1.9. There is a blank dollar figure to insert $300,000. So that would read grant of $300,000.
Very well. I'll move that amendment. any discussion to the amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Now to your bill, Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We're bringing forward a bill that would provide resources for a study into renewable energy on the White Earth Nation up in my district. It's an area where the three major biomes all come together. You have, and this is for development of cellulosic ethanol, and it would be using woody materials as well as prairie grasses, and the three major biomes all come together in that area. It's a unique area in the state where you have the coniferous forests, and you have the deciduous forests, and you have the prairies all meeting together. And I have with me today, I have the honor of presenting with the chair of the White Earth Nation, Irma Visner, and I would like to turn it over to her to discuss it further. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Glitch. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. On behalf of the White Earth Nation of Ojibwe Indians, I bring greetings today. White Earth is requesting the support and the assistance and the funding for an ethanol plant on the White Earth Reservation located in northwestern Minnesota.
Madam Chair,
I'm sorry.
Before you proceed, could you please identify yourself for the record?
I'm sorry. My name is Irma Visner, and I'm the tribal chairwoman of the White Earth Tribe.
Thank you.
The White Earth Tribe is the largest tribe in Minnesota. We have 19,000 registered enrolled members, and we believe that with more enrollment of those who are not enrolled, we would have a population of 25,000. The White Earth Reservation is a large reservation, 36 miles. It's a square with 36 miles on each side. And as Representative Eakin states, we are a beautiful location. We have the prairies and the forests. However, in the midst of all of our beauty and our resources, our economy is very depressed. We have a for many, many years, our reservation has not had the economic engines to address the high unemployment and the needs of the people. So I'm here to request the support of the legislature for an ethanol industry and to take the first step with us, along with our partner, the University of Minnesota, in a feasibility study, the funding for a feasibility study. In this feasibility study, the White Earth Tribe has 3,500 acres of agricultural land to develop prairie grasses, cellulose materials on a broader scale than small samples. So I ask your support, and I thank you very much for this opportunity.
Representative Eakin, do you have any other testifiers?
I do not. Yes. Dick Hemmingson as well, if you would like to testify. And Dr. Tillman.
Robert Eldy, Dean of the College of Biological Sciences and Chair of the Initiative in Renewable Energy and the Environment. I'm very pleased and honored to be invited by Chairwoman Visner to participate in this study. I think we have a team of faculty and consultants well poised to do this efficiently, accurately, and we're very excited about this opportunity. I would also say we were pleased because the White Earth tribal community and a community college came together in support of our large grant application to the Department of Energy and our partners on an educational front as well. So we are becoming very pleased with the ongoing and open opportunities for partnering with the people of the White Earth Nation and view this in that light. I would now turn it over to my colleague, Dick Hemmingson, who is the director of IPA.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dick Hemmingson, the director of the Initiative for Renewable Energy and the Environment at the University of Minnesota. It's my understanding that in your packet you have some information on the front of it from the White Earth Nation, and then I just wanted to briefly kind of touch on the highlights of what we think this feasibility study would encompass. Those are the back three pages of that packet. And I'm not going to, read all this detail to you, but other than, again, to touch on a few of the highlights in terms of what we see as the essential steps or elements of conducting this feasibility study, which is really, in my sort of characterization, a feasibility plus study. That is to say, it's not just a feasibility study with respect to the opportunity to produce biofuels on the reservation, but much more broadly than that, where are there some significant applied research opportunities as we move down the path towards this future with cellulosic biofuels and next-generation biofuels? So in that handout, again, I'll just touch on the broad headings. One of the first steps that, and I should say, as Dr. Eldy mentioned, there has been a great deal of excitement, not only within the university community, but much more broadly than that in participating on such a feasibility study. And the handout that is just going around, I'll touch on also briefly before I conclude, shows the sort of the different entities or units within the university and some external partners that we think would be engaged with us in conducting this feasibility study. So we would work, for example, with our University of Minnesota Extension Service to work with the representatives of the tribe to make sure that we have a clear understanding of what the goals and objectives are from their perspective, and look to our Extension Service to help facilitate that process. We would then go through sort of some basic elements of a prototypical feasibility study. What is the available biomass that currently exists or that could exist, not only on reservation lands, but in the proximity of the reservation lands? So that would be a fairly thorough analysis of the land and soil types, the water availability, the characteristics of the soil, their capacity to grow different types of biomass, and also look beyond, as I said, the constraints of the reservation to see what might be available in a near enough proximity to make some sort of biofuels production facility feasible. We would also then look, obviously, at the energy demand profile. Not only what are the energy needs and opportunities on reservation lands themselves in terms of the prospect of becoming energy self-sufficient, but also what are the kind of demands in the proximity for energy that might be produced from this biomass, and what would be some of the market opportunities for that. We would also then work with partners to assess the various alternative technologies that might be used to convert this biomass to the kind of fuels and power that are needed in the marketplace. So this could range all the way from, gasification strategies to cellulosic or biological approaches to next generation biofuels, what might be nearer term, what might be longer term, and really then assess and analyze those and provide some context for the decision that would ultimately need to be made as to whether or not to proceed. So that would include sort of order of magnitude capital costs, potential employment opportunities, potential revenues, and so forth. And obviously then, as we complete that sort of analysis, would move towards assessing the feasibility of some of the possible alternatives, to identify some of the major factors that will be important for the success of a project, including capital costs, the projected revenue, etc. And in some respects, then, what would also occur is this so-called feasibility plus concept I mentioned earlier. That is to say, this process will almost certainly identify a number of research opportunities, given the unique nature of this location, that might be needed to help achieve the full potential. So that will become part of this analysis as well. And the handout that you have, I just wanted to conclude my comments with, I mentioned earlier the interest and actually the excitement that has occurred not only within the university and across the University of Minnesota, but with a number of different partners. And this is really intended to show you the breadth of that interest. I mentioned earlier the Extension Service, for example, working on the facilitation process. The College of Food, Ag, and Natural Resource Sciences, with several of the departments listed there that would need to be part of this process, agronomy and plant genetics, applied economics, and so forth. The College of Biological Sciences, in terms of the Department of Ecology, Evolution, and Behavior, the BTI, at least a couple of those units within that college. The Carlson School of Management and the Carlson Ventures Enterprise Program, that program for second year MBA students that are very interested in working with us on this project. Our partners at the Natural Resources Research Institute on the Duluth campus, as well as the University of Minnesota Crookston, and several departments, two key ones, in the Institute of Technology, as well as a number of external partners. The National Renewable Energy Lab, the Bioenergy Center, is very interested, in fact, helped participate with us on developing this concept to this stage. Partners from a number of other universities, including Princeton University and others, have expressed interest. Partners at the Ag Utilization Research Institute and MNSCU, as well as private consultants. So I'm going to conclude, Mr. Chair, my comments in terms of the broad overview, and certainly be happy to answer any questions you or the committee might have.
Thank you. Questions for Representative Eakin or any of the testifiers? Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. I appreciate you bringing this forward. I am going to support it, but when I first read about it, it struck me that there is an opportunity here that I wouldn't want to see go untapped. And that is that you have acres upon acres of native prairie with locally adapted seeds, obviously, something that is rare in Minnesota at this point. We have most of the seed that is available is either held by DNR or Fish and Wildlife and the federal government or the Nature Conservancy. I don't see anybody else having the resource that you do. So as I was thinking about it, I was thinking, isn't there an opportunity here to grow and sell these seeds before you burn them? That there is so much opportunity up in this area to replicate what you have, and that I know when we were looking at, not that you shouldn't go out and get the facility, but that you might have more than one revenue stream here. When we were looking at forestry, I mean the parks in DNR, they would put a value on the seeds that they just planted one year, moved from DNR from one plant plot to the next, and it was over $250,000 worth of seeds just in DNR parks with a little restoration that they were doing, and it was a little restoration. So it seems to me that there is an opportunity here, and I would hope you would take hold of that opportunity also.
Mr. Hamilton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, absolutely. In fact, that, in my judgment, might in fact be one of the first and perhaps a pretty significant economic opportunity for this project. And in fact, to the extent that multi-species prairie plantings are part of our biofuels and bioenergy future, that issue of seed availability is a critical one, and one that I think will be part of this overall market assessment that we would conduct here.
I can follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wagenius.
It's not just seed availability, it's great seed availability. And when you have seeds that are local on a big plot like this, they would be disease-free, and that's one of the things that Dr. Tillman has talked to us about. One of the great benefits of using prairie grasses is that they're disease-free. Well, they're only disease-free because they grew up in this area. If you move them too far, they may not be disease-free. They may not grow in a healthy way. But surely they will grow healthy in the agricultural land you have and in your neighboring lands. So I see a huge opportunity here.
Further questions? Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I don't know who to direct this to exactly, but in the bill, maybe Dean Eldy could help out a little bit with this, but on line 1.15, you have ways to produce ethanol or butanol or both and use the liquid fuel source or gasoline supplement and oxidation agent. I'm wondering if you may be limiting yourself a little bit with this where by stating just ethanol or butanol, maybe Bob, you just want to say biofuels or something like that. That as you go down the road to this feasibility study, who knows what you come up with?
Okay. Well,
And if you leave this a little more open, it might be more helpful to you.
Dean Alden?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, I think you're exactly right. In a conversation just before the hearing began, I said exactly the same thing.
Okay.
We know, for example, one product that could come out of a gasification system is dimethyl ether. It has very interesting properties for use as a propane substitute, could be used for home heating, essentially put on the market immediately, and doesn't have some of the barriers of butanol, for example. So I think your point is well taken, and I think from the university side, we would welcome the broadening of that to biofuels.
And if I may, Representative Magnus, Mr. Chair, one might also, in addition to biofuels, consider the term biopower, because there are some significant opportunities on the non-fuel side of biomass. So I think being encompassing is an important point, and we would concur.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, this is going to
an amendment.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is going to the Ag Committee, so maybe I'm willing to work with Representative Eakin and the folks there and U of M and do that if you want to, or we can try to amend it. Now, however, if you have to make another stop, we could do it between the stops. And
yeah, Mr. Chair, I would welcome working with Representative Magnus. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Representative Westrom?
Mr. Chair, the only reason I would say maybe we should amend it now, and then if there's more changes needed, they could certainly work on it, but I just know with looking at my committee agendas, 20-some bills coming up in some of my other committees, this gets to be a lot. Maybe get the intent captured right now. I wonder if Mr. Eloff could come up with a pretty easy amendment. But just my suggestion is, why put off when we know the answer we would like? At least it seems like that's what people would be willing to do. It would get us closer to where we want to be for the Ag Committee.
Thank you, Representative Western. Representative Wagenius.
If we want to go that direction, we could just take away lines 1.16 and 1.17, and after the word produce, add the words you want. If it's biopower or energy, it could be just simply energy, or another word that our good counsel could come up with.
Representative Eakin?
We were looking at, we would do, as Representative Wagenius was suggesting, removing lines 1.16 to 1.17 and adding biofuels and biopower, period.
Mr. Eloff, does that work for you?
The only thing I might suggest, Mr. Chair, is substitute bioenergy for biopower, because I know that's been used in other similar bills that are here this second.
Agreeable to you, Representative Eakin?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I'd move that amendment.
The amendment has been moved to delete line 1.16, 1.17, and after produce on line 1.15, add the words biofuels and bioenergy, period. Representative Osman, to the amendment.
Small recommendation, I changed the or to, or changed the and to an or, so there would be biofuels or bioenergy.
Mr. Chair, that's acceptable to me as well. Thank you.
Good point. Would you like to incorporate that in your amendment, Representative Wester? Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not sure whether to do this in the same motion or to do it as a separate amendment, but in the same spirit, just of keeping as many options on the table, Representative Osment earlier on an earlier bill had on line 1.15 suggested changing cellulosic waste to cellulosic material. And I just think the bill that we're about to see next, I'm going to amend my own bill for the same purpose. And I thought that Representative Eakin might be interested in that same move.
Yes, Representative Kalin, we were just discussing that. That would be acceptable as well.
Representative Western, would you like to incorporate that as well? So then, line 1.15 would read, land to utilize existing forest resources, woody biomass, and cellulosic material to produce biofuels or bioenergy. Is that everyone's understanding, and are we agreed with that, Representative Eakin?
Yes.
Very well. Representative Westrom then renews the motion to adopt his verbal amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Wagenius.
Because you're broadening the scope a little bit here and you've just done it, I would offer a suggestion if you would like to take it up on line 1.10, just inserting after energy biofuels the word production. So it would read renewable energy biofuels production, comma, research, comma, and production facility. So that would enable you also to use this money to produce biofuels. I was thinking of expanding your seed base there.
Yeah. Mr. Chair,
Representative Eakin.
Representative Wagenius, that too, yes, I believe that would be good for expansion. I would accept that.
Then I will move that amendment, Mr. Chair. Line 1.10, after biofuels, add the word production, comma.
Production, comma, research, comma.
Right.
And production facility.
Mm-hmm. Just gives them a little more breath.
Members follow that?
Mm-hmm.
All those in favor of the Wagenius Amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Amendment is adopted. Further discussion to the bill? Representative Westrom.
Chair, thank you. I've asked this question before. I just thought I'd get it on the record. Mr. Henningsen, your idea of this information would be public and able to be duplicated in the future, and what if some possible proprietary information or patentable information comes out of it? Who gets that right, or do we capture that or keep that as a state or a government body, or does it, you follow what I'm saying? And my main concern is that, one, we've got information that can be shared with other parties that may learn from this, and two, if there's discoveries along the way that we the state and or university benefit from that and not some third party that didn't have any part in playing or finding the discovery.
Mr. Hammingson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, certainly at this stage of feasibility, that information would be, you know, generally available. You know, down the road, should specific research projects that are, for example, funded solely by the tribe, that, you know, that in that eventuality could be a different situation. But certainly at this stage of the feasibility, I think these broad components are important. And what is, again, unique about this opportunity, beyond sort of the traditional, if you will, feasibility study, are these research opportunities that we would describe.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Henningsen.
Representative Westrom.
This would be public information that you could use in the future, or other groups putting together a similar plant could use?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, yes.
And last question, Mr. Chair. Representative
Westrom.
Mr. Henningsen, how do you see this fitting in with the biomass heating and air conditioning plant that they are working on at the University of Minnesota Morris, and some of these same questions of collection of biomass products, corn stover, etc., are being contemplated in their stakeholder group meetings going on right now, and some of the same concepts and issues and materials will be used in this project in Morris. It's
was funded in the bonding bill a couple of years ago. How do you see these two overlapping, and do you think we can have some mixtures or blended information that one can learn from the other?
Mr. Hamilton?
Mr. Chair, that was a question. Certainly. In fact, I would say that would be essential to not sort of duplicate the wheel, so to speak, with regard to that. On the other hand, there are some significant differences with respect to, you know, geology and geography and location and weather, and so to that extent, there will be some differences. Representative Weston, last meetings we had on this prospect was just last week when, for example, we were talking with Lowell Rasmussen from the University of Minnesota at Morris on these very issues. How do we build upon what we know, discover what we don't know, and apply that as broadly as is possible? So I see a lot of synergy.
Representative Osmond.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment, because I was looking at the language, because line point 1.12, we have the grant must be used, and then down on line 1.15, we had to utilize existing forest services. I assume that the existing is only referring to the forest services and not to the rest of the line, because when we get to the cellulosic materials, some of that may not be existing. And so I'm always get a little bit concerned when we put things in statute. When people start looking at the letter of the law, sometimes we get hung up on those little pieces, and just want to know that the intent isn't there for the existing to, I assume, was referenced to forest resources, so we're not out there planting new forests, but on this thing. But just a point.
Thank you, Representative Eakin.
Yes, we'll take a look at that as the bill moves on to the Ag Committee. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Osmond. Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess to any of the testifiers, I would just like to know, I was reading through some of your information, the background information about this project, and I was wondering if you could just give a little further details about how you anticipate involving the area right around the White Earth Reservation, if it's not exactly on that, the contiguous counties and areas.
Mr. Chairman, and to answer the question, Representative Saylor, we believe that the area surrounding the reservation, this project will not only stimulate the economy of the tribe, but it will stimulate the entire economy for miles surrounding the White Earth Reservation. The tribe foresees a large plant as a result of the feasibility study. And we believe that the entire economy around that area will be vastly stimulated and improved, not only with jobs, but farmers supplying the biomass for the grasses for the plant. And it's a wonderful opportunity. And with the tribe being, the tribe also wants to look to be energy independent, and we would we'd like to partner with many different government units, and so I just see many positive benefits from such a project.
Thank you. I just wanted to confirm what I had thought was the case, that it would be beyond just the reservation as well and its economic impact. Thank you.
Further questions from members? Representative Hackburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm not sure, maybe Representative Eakin wants to answer the question. Mr. Chairman, I'm not real sure where this money's coming from, what pool of money or source of money, if it's from the general fund or if there's something set aside in Representative Junkie's committee to pay for this, but it's certainly state dollars, apparently, and just wondering if the testifiers could state as to when this study might be complete, or if we're going to receive back any kind of a report on this study, or if we're just handing over $300,000 and never hearing from it again.
Representative Eakin and Representative Hackworth, I should point out that the funding would not be in this committee. That would be in Representative Junkie's committee.
Thank you,
Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hackbarth. I was just going to mention that the plan was for it to be in the omnibus agriculture bill, so it would be in their budget. As far as when the study would be completed, it says here that it's anticipated that the report will be presented within 6 months of the official start of the project. And copies of the report will be provided at that time. So,
is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing no one, Chair will renew his motion that House File 1350, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance with a recommended re-referral to the Agricultural, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Division. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Kalin.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kalin, you want to move your bill?
I'd be happy to move House File 1664. It'd be recommended to pass and refer to finance. All right, do we have to go back up to finance to go to Ag Finance?
Yes. It'd be the same motion as the one we just entertained in the Eastern bill.
Then ditto. Mr. Chair and members, a couple of housekeeping things before we get started on the bill. I have first a written author's amendment, the A1 amendment that the page is handing out as we speak. And you'll see that one of the suggestions that became an amendment on Representative Eakin's bill is indeed line 1.2 of the bill to confirm that we're dealing with cellulosic material rather than refining it to waste. So I'd like to move the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Discussion to the amendment. All those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Amendment is adopted.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I have three brief oral amendments that, following up on our discussion to Representative Eakin's bill. First is on line 1.8, the funding amount of $300,000. On line 1.9, after energy biofuels, inserting production, comma. And on line 1.15, after waste to produce, now with the amendment, it will read cellulosic material to produce. Delete the rest of 1.15 and all of 1.16 and insert biofuels or bioenergy.
Representative Kalin, I think on line 1.9, there's a couple of commas needed that, if you want to be consistent with the amendment in the Eakin bill, I think it would be biofuels, comma, production, comma, research, comma.
To be consistent, I will accept your sage wisdom and amend my verbal amendment as such.
Members understand the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? That amendment is adopted. Now, to your bill, Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The bill that we have before us is another cellulosic ethanol feasibility study, this time proposed in the sandy soil of East Central Minnesota in the counties of Chisago, Pine, and Isanti. The project is a is sort of the next step of an ad hoc coalition in Chisago County, the Chisago County Land Use Coalition, that has been around for about 3 years, maybe a little bit more, and it's actually the result of an unlikely working group of self-identified environmentalists, tree huggers. Some of them have actually used that term. The Chisago County Gateway Coalition that I was the chair of several years ago, and the Chisago County Taxpayers for Responsible Land Use, a group of large landowners who've come together to advocate for their interests. Over some pretty tense cups of coffee early on, about 3 years ago, Mr. David Whitney, who's to your left, members, and members of the Gateway Coalition sat down and realized that we have far more in common than we do, than we disagree about. And so we came together and really focused on the common ground and finding some innovative ways to deal with the development pressures, especially residential sprawl in our community and the loss of open space, but also the fact that our landowners didn't have the full complement of choices for their economic interests in terms of continuing to farm and in terms of preserving open space and wildlife habitat, but not losing their shirt in the process and not being able to take the best advantage of their 401k, which is their land. We, with working with our county commissioners, Commissioner Lynn Schultz is here, and the chair of our board, Mike Robinson, is here as well. We helped to forge a consensus comprehensive plan that includes incentives for cluster development, includes opportunities to sell development credits so that farmers can continue to farm, but recoup some of the investment on their land, but we can also preserve open space and wildlife habitat as well. And Chisago County is also facing unique pressures in that we have the lowest commercial industrial tax base of any county in the state. This project is a real obvious next step for us, that we have the sandy soil and marginal farmland and an opportunity to turn that liability into a real asset. And but we're also taking more of a regional approach. I think Representative Saylor's earlier question about how limited a scope will the White Earth Project be is addressed by including Isani and Pine counties, recognizing that that soils don't stop at county borders, and that we really have an opportunity to continue to open up our options here. We also have transportation corridors. We have Interstate 35. We have the rail line that comes south into North Branch from Hinckley. And we also have the rail line that goes along the 65 corridor through Cambridge. So we have plenty of options, and we don't want to limit ourselves. Lastly, I just want to recognize that we just heard today from some of us from Representative Colin Peterson, the chair of the Congressional Agriculture Committee, and he was almost describing to a T what the next step is for cellulosic ethanol, working on Dr. Tillman's research, different soil types, keeping our options open in terms of whether it's switchgrass or prairie grass or other cellulosic material. And so I think that not only does our project and our geographic location fit into what IRE and the University of Minnesota needs to do for the next step of cellulosic research in Minnesota, but it also fits within what the national scope and the national trend is going to be to move cellulosic ethanol to market as soon as we can. So I'd like to just quickly hand it over to first to Mr. Whitney and then Commissioner Schultz.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Dave Whitney, and I'm a resident of Chisago County. I'm not a paid staff. I'm not an expert. I'm just a concerned and interested citizen of Chisago. As Jeremy said, a few years ago, I was selected by landowners to represent their interests when the comprehensive plan was being redrafted in Chisago County. And our group is approximately 500 landowners that have larger parcels in Chisago County. And because of the excellent comprehensive open space policy of the comprehensive plan, I'm here to, as a citizen, to tell you that this is a natural, this house bill is a natural outcome of the new comprehensive plan that we've adopted. And you had experts speaking today, and they're very eloquent, and I am not eloquent like that. I just want to tell you from my heart, if I can, why I hope that you will support this particular bill. And all I want to do is to tell you the differences from what you heard previously and how it applies to Chisago County. Chisago County itself has 180,000 acres of land, 20 acres or more, that's undeveloped. Now, that doesn't include Pine County or Isani, but we have a huge amount of land that's open. We also have poor soils. Farming in Chisago, as far as corn and soybean, is a marginal product. And it's been that way for a long time. This potentially offers a great opportunity for farmers. Now, we've been in contact with Dr. Tillman via email, and most of the ideas that I'm presenting today really are outcomes from the discussions that we've had with Dr. Tillman. In our discussions, and I'll try to mention this, which it has to do with, not only do you have to have marginal soils, but to make this whole thing work, you have to come up with a market for your product. And in our case, the thing that I hope this study would do, what are the markets for a biomass product? Prairie grass or something like that. A feasibility study would analyze potentially three immediate markets for biomass product, and ethanol being a fourth product, maybe 5 or 6 or 7 years away. The first potential market would be, can a biomass pellets compete with corn as a burning agent in pellet stoves? The second one is, can biomass products be profitably used to co-combust with coal in energy generation plants? And the third, can prairie biomass pellets be burned in corn ethanol plants rather than burning natural gas? And if any of these or all of these are potential, we have an immediate market for farmers to grow prairie grass in Chisago County. There's an immediate market because the technology is currently available for pelletizing this kind of product. And if we can immediately come up with it, we can get farmers then to start growing it even before the technology is available to produce ethanol. So it's an intermediate phase that we could get going right now, and it could be profitable to the farming community in Chisago County. And I really ask for your support on this particular bill. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to hand it over to Commissioner Lynn Schultz.
Commissioner Schultz, welcome
Chairman,
to the committee.
Members, Commissioner Lynn Schultz from Chisago County. Minnesota made the commitment to be a renewable energy, and that commitment is probably leading in the nation. We are transition and collar counties, but we have a strong desire to retain our rural nature. The cellulosic energy would give us that opportunity. The study would determine the commercial venture and if it would fit into our surroundings, and it would fit for all three counties and beyond. The question was raised earlier, would the study go beyond the boundaries of the White Earth Reservation? This study could go well beyond the boundaries of Chisago County. Some of the issues that I think will be should be looked at in this feasibility study would be the Wild River State Park and the seed production potential that is there. It already has an enormous prairie seed production. We need to look at the availability of that. The transportation corridors, as Representative Kalin already mentioned, the rail lines that move through this area, the marginal land. Chisago County has the eastern border of the Anoka Sand Plain. The Anoka Sand Plain, which we've all talked about water quality, to me, an issue that is not being addressed but may be brought out in this feasibility is The row crops that are currently being planted in those types of soils are of great concern for the water quality because of the herbicides and sprays that are needed. If we could convert to prairie grass and eliminate the need for that sort of intensive farming on that Anoka sand plain soil, this would be a good thing, and it would expand beyond the boundaries of Chisago and Isanti counties specifically. The U of M has done a lot of study on that Anoka sand plain area. We've not discussed this, but I think the study could bring that out. It also envelops the preservation of open space. As Mr. Whitney indicated, we have done a great deal with our comprehensive plan to look at preserving open space while accommodating the growth of a transition county by encouraging cluster development. The size of the ag implements these days preclude good farming practices. When we get into cluster areas, the equipment often is just not going to fit in those. This type of farming practice might be very utilizable in those areas. That would also be brought out in this study. Again, Representative Kalin indicated that our area is very economically deficient as far as commercial development. So this would be opportunities to explore mid-range enterprises, for example, the pelleting and things of that nature in relation to the ethanol being the end product. And another issue that is not talked about much because it's not well understood is the carbon credit issue in agriculture. It is an issue that is, even in the farm community, not very well understood yet. There's a lot being developed in it, but this could very appropriately be an added funding stream for farmers to tap into. But we all realize farmers need every avenue of income they can get as incentives to do the right things. We often, as farmers, and I'm a dairy farmer, would like to do the right thing more often. We can't do it economically. If we could team this sort of enterprise with carbon crediting, we would have another funding stream that might make it a good saleable idea to the farm community. So I thank you for your time today and would appreciate your consideration on this very much.
Thank you. Commissioner Robinson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I do my job completely different than Commissioner Schultz. She takes notes and writes everything down, and I'm just here with no notes, no nothing. I'm just going to talk for a couple minutes and then I'll move on. I'm Mike Robinson. I'm chairman of the board of Chisago County. The three counties we're talking about, Isanti County is pretty much all sand. Chisago County is half sand, half real thick, wet clay, and you get up in Pine County and it's pine trees and brush. The three counties are right along the same area, and they're all three completely different. Our area, any job, we need it up there. For Chisago County, two-thirds of the people that work don't work in the county. They leave the county every day to come down this way. And any kind of job helps the whole area. But Pine County is one of the poorest counties in the state, with Kanawha County in that area. So if we can find something to help these people out, our property taxes, we've had a problem the last 4 years, and we need help. One more thing before I'm done here is as far as the oil and the war, we got to get so we can make our own energy. The more we do it, it will just help out, because when you look on TV, you wonder if those guys are getting hurt and blown up for oil, or are they doing it for peace. And the more we can get rid of foreign countries and oil, the better off we are. And any of you guys want to come up to Chisago County and fish or visit, you're welcome. And
see if you can help on a transportation deal, too.
I spent a lot of time driving through Chisago County, Commissioner. Are there any questions? Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to mention that my next-door neighbor, Representative Kalin, is an able ambassador for Chisago County. The bill says that the grant would go to Chisago, Isanti, and Pine counties. How's that going to work? Is one of you going to be the fiscal agent? Is there some joint powers, biofuels board, or something like that?
Chisago County will have the money.
Sorry?
Chisago County will take the money.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Gardner. As we often experience in East Central Minnesota, we have to partner together, and we have a lot of joint powers boards for libraries, solid waste, Regional Development Commission. So I imagine that there'll be a joint powers board set up, and I imagine that Representative Pilkey might have something to say about Pine County's interests as well. And I know, just want to point out, Mr. Bernou, from Pine County might want to address that really briefly as well.
Chairman Hilty, members of the board, my name is Gregory Bernou. I'm the Pine County Land Commissioner. I'm responsible for the management of the 50,000 acres of trust forest land in Pine County. In my other duties, I also monitor bills that come down to the Capitol, and I stumbled on this one the other day, and I thought, wow, what a great deal for at least my department that I work for. I'm not here representing the board, but I will echo their sentiment with the commissioners from Chisago County. Anything we can do to get business up in the east central part of Minnesota, we can do it. We've got the transportation network set up between rail, the freeway, just even the local county roads. We have biomass bale between farming and the southern half of the county. Plus also, not to mention, is we've got, I manage 50,000 acres of forest land in Pine County. The DNR manages another 170,000 acres between there and Kinetic and a little bit of Isanti. And off of that, we can produce a pile of tonnage of biomass to make this project very feasible. The other thing is, with these counties where this would be strategically located, we're between two population centers. The Duluth area, both pushing up to 180,000 people, they're always looking for energy. Minnesota Power can't handle it all. And you have the metro area to the south with very little infrastructure and jumping onto existing power lines. Energy facility in this area would be fantastic. Where you locate it, if it's in Chisago, I stand your Pine County, great. I would really like to see one put there. That's all I have.
Questions? Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just wondering, a number of years ago, we had a state representative, Doug Carlson, from, I believe, that same part of the country. He always lovingly called it the pucker brush country. I'm wondering, are we going to change, turn pucker brush into energy now? Is that that'd be a great thing if we could do that.
Would we love to. As a matter of fact, on that, the DNR is just coming out with a set of guidelines open for public review on the management of brushlands and thinning the forest for biomass, open for public review on the Minnesota Forest Resource Partnership website. And it's geared right to this project, and wow.
Representative Osmond, you may be aware that former Representative Carlson is now a Pine County Commissioner. So he'll be involved in the terminology up here for a while.
Further questions? Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none.
My name is Tom O'Meara. I live up in Chisago County. I just wanted to
say... Yes, protocol.
Oh, sorry. Excuse me.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom O'Meara. I live in Chisago County. I sell real estate for a living, primarily development type. And I can tell you that the ancient paradigm of first rooftops and then businesses doesn't really apply in this particular case where we are. Really, in this case, we need businesses, and then the rooftops will come up there. And one of the great benefits of Chisago County, and why this plant would be so great for it, is that people can reverse commute. People with the expertise required to run the various businesses up there, including this plant, to reverse commute, use a lot less fuel, for example, and enjoy a real rural life as well as all the amenities of a modern life. So I'm here today to support my friends and to say that if you give us this funding, we will build you a wonderful plant if the feasibility study says it's worth doing. And based on my conversations with farmers and others, that I'd say it's going to be worth doing. It'll work out really well for the people of Minnesota. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Anyone else wish to testify? Any further questions? Representative Kalin?
I think plenty has been said, and I think it's a strong project worthy of study, and I appreciate your support, and send this along to finance. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, I'll take that to mean that Representative Kalin renews his motion that House File 1664, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred or be referred to the Committee on Finance with a recommended re-referral to Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Division. That's always a real mouthful.
Yes, that's precisely what I meant, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Next on the agenda is House File 1644, which I don't think I have a packet, but... Mr. Chair, I would like to move House File 1644 to be before us and to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Energy Finance Bill.
Thank you, Representative Hilty, Chair Hilty, and the bills in front of us. To your bill, Mr. Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a very simple bill that does basically two things. It extends the sunset date on the current funding mechanism for the Minnesota Initiative for Renewable Energy and the Environment, IRE, and it also adds to that funding source, which is the current percentage of the Conservation Improvement Fund program, rather, cooperative electric associations and municipal utilities. With that, Mr. Chair, I would turn to our testifiers, Dean Aldi and Mr. Hemmingson, to give their views on the bill.
Go ahead with your testimony, Dean Aldi.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, members of the committee. My name is Robert Hilty. I serve as Dean of the College of Biological Sciences at the University of Minnesota and chair of the Executive Committee for the Initiative in Renewable Energy and the Environment. I'm very pleased to be here again today, and would first like to ask the chair how the clock is looking and how you would like us to divide the time.
To testify and to the committee, we have 15 minutes left today. So there you go.
Okay. 15. Chairman, members of the committee, then, thank you. I think what I will do, if you would permit me, is to fly through this presentation without spending a lot of time so that questions could be addressed at the end.
Thank you, Mr. Eldy, and the committee members will take questions at the end.
So, first, the mission that of the Initiative for Renewable Energy and the Environment, established by your actions in the 03 legislative session, to promote statewide economic development, sustainable, healthy, and diverse ecosystems, and national energy security through development of bio-based and other renewable resources and processes. I'm pleased with that mission statement that was crafted now nearly 5 years ago, because I think it continues to resonate strongly and is more relevant than ever as we look forward to the future as we see it as of today. Our core values from the beginning have been collaborating, partnering, leveraging resources, and doing work that has an impact that makes a difference. So House File 9 from the 03 special session appropriated $10 million, or asked Xcel Energy to deliver $10 million from the Renewable Development Fund, and each year since then, approximately $2 million from the SIP obligation. And I quote from the legislation, funds shall be distributed to the University of Minnesota Initiative for Renewable Energy and the Environment to support basic and applied research and demonstration activities at the university. And this is what how we have invested those resources over this now just over 4 year period. As you can see, this pie, the pie has many slices, not all of them are the same. The largest slice of our investments has been in bioenergy, bioproducts, and biofuels research. But even other sectors of this pie have a strong bio component. For example, hydrogen research, 13% of the investment, is largely focused on biological methods for producing hydrogen, and so on. I'm also very pleased with some of the demonstration projects, and I'll say a bit more about that, especially the one out in Representative Westrom's district in Morris. These resources have brought together the power of the University of Minnesota. We've brought together faculty and students from across in the various colleges and units that are illustrated here, both the Twin Cities campus and our coordinate campuses, as well as our research and outreach centers. So our presence across the state is pretty impressive, we believe, and it reaches the ecosystems and niches of Minnesota, and we think we are therefore capable of delivering site-specific strategies for participating in the bioeconomy. Now, as much as we are proud of the research accomplishments, and I'll share some of those highlights with you in just a moment, and as much as we've pulled together faculty from across units of the university, I think one of the more important things that we've done is the core mission of a research university. And that is, in the context of our research enterprise, we educate students. There will be more than 75 newly minted PhDs during this inaugural period of IRE, students who spent 4 or 5 years doing nothing but research related to renewable energy and the environment. And this will be, as well as those master's and bachelor's students who participated in these projects, this will be a significant help to Minnesota as those people enter the workforce and help create the bioeconomy of our future. So I'd like to now review what I will refer to as several disruptive technologies. Disruptive technologies, if you will, is exemplified by the impact the iPod had to the music industry. When I was growing up, and I actually celebrated a certain decadal landmark last week. You can guess which one that was. But I'll tell you, we grew up on 45 RPM singles, so that probably identifies, kind of narrows the possibilities for my birthday. But that music industry has changed slowly over the years, but changed rapidly with the introduction of that disruptive technology, the iPod. Similarly, our practices and our uses of energy will not change unless we discover and deliver to the marketplace technologies that change the way we behave. And that is one of our core goals at IRE. So one of those, we've heard several times before, is the work of our ecologist, Dave Tillman. Dave Tillman has worked for now 30 years at the Cedar Creek Natural History Area and Representative Hackforest District. Has led to the amazing new concept of carbon-negative biofuels. Carbon-negative biofuels. That is, the more you use, the more carbon dioxide you remove from the atmosphere. This is a profound and disruptive technology that we need to put into practice, on a scale much larger than we can do at the Cedar Creek Natural History Area, and several of the feasibility studies that have been mentioned earlier today are very likely places where we can scale this up and give it the real test it deserves. I think I'll just to scoot beyond that. I mean, the really interesting thing about these prairie ecosystems is that they store, that the biomass is greater underground than above ground. And it's that underground perennial root system combined with the microbes that symbiotically live with those roots that are the champs of terrestrial carbon sequestration. And we can regain that carbon sequestration by as appropriately planting mixed prairie species, especially in marginal lands. Another disruptive technology, why make ethanol? You've been reading as recently in yesterday's Star Tribune the opinion piece by Dave Tillman and Jason Hill about current practices of corn-based ethanol and soy-based biodiesel, and that certainly using feedstock as perennial prairie grasses is an improvement. But big other improvements can be made in what you take out, what kind of a spigot you turn on that plant. And we put this challenge to some of our faculty, and one of whom came up with the idea, why make ethanol? Why not just make gasoline? Why not? And he reasoned that there must be microbes, and he's an expert in the bizarre metabolism of bacteria that live in strange places. He reasoned that there must be bacteria that have evolved to make hydrocarbons, the same kind called alkanes, that are the sweet spot of gasoline, decane, octane, and so on. And indeed, he discovered such organisms. He's now working to engineer the metabolism of those organisms because they only make little teeny bits. But now, given the power of post-genome biology, it's completely feasible to start making alkanes directly from sugars instead of making ethanol. That has huge positive properties because, if you remember, one of the big limitations of current ethanol technology is you've got to use a tremendous amount of heat to distill the ethanol away from the water. If you create gasoline, the gasoline floats on top of the water, and you simply drain the water away, and you've got your gasoline almost ready to go. So that whole technology saves tremendously on the power needed for production. Another technology that's being invented as we speak is it's been very difficult to use enzymatic mechanisms to break down forest biomass. That is, the taller it can stand, the more lignin it has in its polymer composition. As illustrated here, it's a combination of cellulose fibers and lignin fibers, and that lignin really makes it tough to break down. You can burn it, but you can't ferment it. These guys have figured out that fungi that break down lignin and are now engineering the enzyme to break it down more efficiently, so you could take the soup that you obtain out of woody biomass and dump it into a fermenter and make ethanol or alkanes. This is our favorite chemical engineer, Lanny Schmidt, Regents Professor, who has figured out how to reform ethanol from biomass and make it into hydrogen. This could be an important technology that will disrupt transportation industries when it can be implemented. Another disruptive technology relates to one of the big challenges of using biomass, which we've come to rely on energy-dense feedstock like coal, and those coal trains run from western Wyoming and western Montana here and farther east because coal can be transported efficiently because it's energy-dense. However, bales of straw, you don't have that much energy content for the mass, and so how can we concentrate that latent energy into a more transportable means? Well, Roger Ruan from our College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resource Sciences, in partnership with colleagues in Norway, has figured out how to pyrolyze or burn, using a very special microwave device, burn that stuff down into bio-crude. So instead of having 7 semi-loads of bales, you have one tank load, one tanker full of bio-crude. Another disruptive technology being conducted out at our Morris Research and Outreach Center, I find to be extremely interesting, because one of the problems with wind-generated electricity that we all know about is grid and the transmission line issues with wind-generated electricity. The wind doesn't blow always when we want it and need it, and so we have to find ways to store it and then transmit it. very interesting projects going on out there is to take that wind-generated electricity, use it to split water. Water is H2O. The H is hydrogen. The O is oxygen. To split that chemical bond apart and separate them and keep them separate. So you have hydrogen on one side in a storage vessel and oxygen on the other side. And then you could run that hydrogen through a fuel cell in the Lanny Schmidt fashion and use it to recreate electricity and send that electricity back up on the grid when demand was proper, more advantageous. Or, and this is the most intriguing and innovative thing, people have reasoned, why couldn't you take that hydrogen, combine it with nitrogen from the air, 78% of the air we breathe is nitrogen, combine the two and make anhydrous ammonia and use it for locally generated fertilizer. Now that's really intriguing, maybe especially in light of the accident that happened in Lake City just on over the weekend, where because of the need to transport anhydrous ammonia from South Florida up to these parts, accidents happen. Fewer accidents would happen if you could generate that locally. And furthermore, it would be a boost to the farm economy because you can use that. You don't have to pay Florida to make that anhydrous ammonia and use natural gas. This would be, if you will, green ammonia. That is chemicals made virtually out of thin air. That is absolutely disruptive. And finally, I think, well, almost finally here, I know we're running short of time, we have amazing teams of nanotechnology experts who are working diligently to create next generation photovoltaic devices to capture electrons out of sunlight. We have people, Jane Davidson pictured here, using what we call passive solar technologies to create new materials for roofings and housing material. These will make much more energy efficient sorts of buildings. And we have team squads of people who have worked to look at the transition for moving to a more carbon neutral sort of economy. So if we look at the big picture of energy uses across the U.S., we have different needs and different uses of energy. As you see here, this pie is not quite cut into quarters, but almost. Transportation is one sector. Industrial usage is another. And then housing and commercial buildings, another two sectors. We believe that it's important, given how we use energy here in Minnesota, that we have in our portfolio of research alternatives strategies that address each of these. So funding and renewing and extending the lifetime of IREE, as proposed in the legislation you're considering today, will support, firstly, core operations, the staffing, the oversight of our projects, our ability to manage these grants, to conduct symposia, and to develop partners. As we look forward, we intend to look on both sides of the equation. The first side of the equation, if you will, is what we've been doing a lot of thus far. These areas, these boxes that you see, are the clusters of research activity held together and stitched together by this cluster of policy, economics, and ecosystem analysis. That's the unit in which Dave Tillman has been the lead participant, and that's influenced all of these others. We also intend to look more diligently on the consumption side of this equation in terms of further efforts on conservation and efficient utilization of energy. It's important at this stage that we continue to develop the workforce through education, curricular development. We ought to have the smartest kids coming through our K-20 educational systems of any kids in the nation in terms of smarts and renewable energy. Funding for IRE will support additional strategic demonstrations of the sort that we have and we're very proud of out in Morris, moving basic and applied research toward commercialization, scaling these efforts up. I'd like to just share this with you because I think it shows you the continuum of basic research to commercial application and through its various recognized stages. The university has excelled over its history, especially at the basic research side, moving things toward the research side and to the pilot scale. And then you see business and industry picks up and really are the entities that do commercialization. We propose, and we're working very diligently with Tim Mulcahy, our Vice President for Research, to close this white space, this gap, so it looks something more like this. There's a continuum and a long interface along which we at the university interact with business and industry. A demonstration platform, I won't go into it again, but again, it's community scale. We believe that's a really interesting challenge to scale renewable energy projects and the integration of various modes of renewable energy to scale them at the community level, because that will, at its heart, put more dollars and resources in Minnesota's rural economies. Funding will help us support our strategic partnerships, key areas with national labs, other research institutions. We don't have everything to address every problem. We need to partner and collaborate with other entities, as I've shown here. Long term, we need to build our capacity. We're steering our internal resources as we have occasion when retirements occur to continue to build capacity in these areas of research and outreach. But we need help. So sustaining and extending the time frame of IRE will strengthen our position as a renewable energy leader, create economic opportunities, develop energy technologies of the future, educate the next generation of renewable energy experts, assist the state in moving toward the goal of 25% renewable energy by 2025. We can't just turn that spigot on. Better position the university and state to compete for renewable energy research funds from federal governments and others, and improve Minnesota's environment by developing a more sustainable energy system. I'm very proud of the partnerships that we have engaged thus far. I illustrate here IRE and its presence in many communities in the state, the White Earth community, OWRI and its locations, entities in the Minsky system, which we've partnered with, particularly in the DOE application, the Science Museum, and Wolf Ridge Environmental Learning Center. I think we've proven our capacity to be good partners where we find additional opportunities. So the competition is accelerating, and so although we've had a gracious head start thanks to your action in 2003, we have to recognize the nature of the competition right now. This is becoming big business. States are vying for leadership positions. We're not the only kid on the block, and I illustrate here what is now outdated in terms of initiatives, both private and public sector initiatives, in states and various regions around the country, including our neighbors, Iowa and others. And it's not just here within the U.S. Countries vie for leadership, as I illustrate here. So how do I see the future? I see the future where Minnesota invents, develops, and exports the technologies that everyone around the world uses to do renewable energy and biofuels. We train the next generation of energy experts, and rural communities throughout Minnesota will meet their own energy needs and sell energy, will be net energy exporters. And with that, I thank you greatly for your support over the past 4 years. I look forward to partnerships that we can imagine for the future, and would be eager to answer questions if time permits.
Thank you, Dean Elde. I believe there's at least one question. Representative Brainerd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Elde, I'm wondering if you do any partnering with the Minsky system.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, we do. If you look back at this map right here that I flashed over very quickly, in particular, we have collaborations with Bemidji State, Southwest State, Minnesota West, Minnesota State at Mankato, and so on. So we're very pleased with the way these partnerships are unfolding, both on educational fronts and on research partnerships.
Thank you, Mr. Church. The reason for asking is obviously Minsky prides itself on the applied research side of things, and you talked about closing that gap, and I think the combination of the pure research you might be involved in and the applied work they do is a perfect partnership. So. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative. It's actually very interesting because what we're discovering in this process is that we both do both and have capacity for both. And so we're enhancing the capacity both on the applied and the basic. Because, for example, every Minsky institution has some faculty who are chemists. Many of those chemists have capacity to do not pilot scale applied research, but basic research in collaboration with us. So we're discovering a lot of very interesting talent in the process.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hilty, is your motion refer this to another committee or possible inclusion, or how? I don't recall the motion.
Mr. Hilty.
Was to have this bill laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus finance bill.
Thank you, Representative Magnus. Any other questions? Seeing none, final comments, Representative Hilty. Oh, Representative Westrum, thank you.
Representative Hilty, I understand 2013 is what you're extending the data proposing. Any reason not to go a little further, 10 years out, give a little more continuity or assurance to the research that's going on?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum, this is the way the bill was proposed to me. Perhaps Dean Elby could give us a rationale for that date.
Dean Elby. Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrum. We, as the University of Minnesota and the Initiative in Renewable Energy and Environment, we intend to be here for the long haul. This is something that is not a flash in the pan or something. You know, we're working now on second generation biofuels. There will be the need for a third generation biofuels. Improvements will be needed for the foreseeable future. So we are eager to extend this and work diligently. I think we're open to continuing to report to you, to continuing to work diligently on this, and whatever would be your pleasure that would give us. I think it's important that we have a run of something on the order of 5 years at least at a time, because that gives us, these research projects often have a 3 to 4 year horizon, and so in order to time that and to not have a cliff over which we fall and then try to regroup and reorganize again, it's good to have a long-term view.
Mr. Chair, follow-up, Representative Hilty, Dean Elde. In this bill, I haven't read the exact language, but is it just an extension of what currently is Excel? Are you proposing any other SIP contributions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum, what the bill does is it removes the reference to a nuclear generation facility so that it would include all of the current contributors to the SIP program.
I see. Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions from members? Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hilty. Are you amenable to just repeal the sunset entirely? I don't understand why we have a sunset on something that is going to be this vitally needed for as far in the future as we can envision.
Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond, I certainly would be amenable to that. We can certainly discuss that when we take up the finance bill.
Sounds good to me. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Seeing no further questions, Representative Hilty, any last words?
Mr. Chair, I think we need to get out of here.
Thank you. And renew the motion to labor for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. We'll take that in favor. There's no reason to vote on that, so we're laying it over. And thank you for your time today, and see you Wednesday.
Mr. Chair, I think we need to adjourn.
And the meeting is adjourned.